You're listening to the HR Happy Hour Show with hosts Steve Bowes and Trish McFarland. Since 2009, the HR Happy Hour Show has been bringing you thought leaders, workplace and technology experts, academics, and more to take on the most important and interesting topics impacting work, human resources, technology, and the workplace. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net. Welcome to the HR Happy Hour Show. My name's Steve Bowes. We are coming to you live from where, Jason Averbuch?
Shanghai, China.
Shanghai, China. As you may have guessed, Jason Averbuch is our guest on today's very special edition of the HR Happy Hour Show.
I'm so excited to be here.
From HR Tech in China. Now, a couple of quick announcements before we get you rolling.
Okay.
So I know you're kind of a ball of energy about the digitized workforce.
Okay.
I heard you a couple times this week talk about it. But a couple of quick announcements. Trish McFarland, our co-host, not with us because she is downstairs helping to close this conference on stage. So she's doing a wonderful job. And so she's not going to be recording with us because she's busy, but she's here doing a fantastic job. My second announcement is Ram Charan. We just saw him close the show. Fantastic speech. If anyone has ever seen him, you'll appreciate his unique style. That was fun. And my third special announcement is what, Jason? What's my third announcement? HR Tech Conference. Tickets on sale now. www.hrtechconference.com. Use my code STEVE300 for $300 off your registration. And finally, of course, this HR Happy Hour show is sponsored by our friends at Panopto. For businesses and universities, Panopto is everything YouTube isn't, with enterprise-grade security, built-in recording, and live streaming. And a unique search engine that finds any word spoken in any video. That's pretty cool. Panopto is how professionals share knowledge. Thousands of organizations around the world rely on Panopto to record and live stream presentations, meetings, events, and more. We should have had them out here at this meeting, probably.
For sure. Yeah.
Find out more at panopto.com. That's PANOPTO.com. And thanks to them. So, Jason Averbuch, welcome again to the show. How are you?
Thank you. It's great to be here. It's been a great couple days here in China, and before that, a great couple days in Singapore.
We are world travelers, as it were. Well, you are. You're carrying on, I've heard,
to
farther parts unknown.
Yes, yeah.
You're keeping to work. So, hey, great to see you.
Thanks. But I think one of the things that I've learned about this trip, I know you didn't ask the question, but I'll answer the question.
This is your show. You're the guest.
Is that, you know, no matter where you are in the world, we see the same opportunities for the human resource function, which is the reinventing of itself. And even, you know, as you mentioned, Ram. You know, Ram's been talking about this for a long time. And you hear Ram say, you know, the concept of how do we focus on the business versus HR. Ram came out with a very controversial piece a couple years ago where he basically said there's no place for HR in the world. And, you know, just listening to him today, I think, you know, what I took away from it is that there's no place for the way that traditional HR has worked. And there's an opportunity for all of us going forward. And I think it's great to hear him speak on a global scale like that.
Yeah, it's kind of, on one hand, it's kind of over in a way, but on the other hand, it's being reinvented.
Yep.
And HR people are doing that reinvention. And actually, Jason, you talk a lot about that yourself, how HR people, HR leaders really can be at the forefront of buzzword, right, digital transformation. But I love what you said today. Maybe you can expand upon it a little bit. When you were presenting in Singapore, as well as here in Shanghai, around digital transformation, that, hey, it's not really technology. And I'm going to steal your line. You said digital doesn't equal technology. I'd love for you to maybe comment on that a little
bit. Yeah, so one of the things that's fascinating about the concept of digital, so we use this term digital transformation, first of all, and I'd like to start with saying everyone's already digital. Like, look at us sitting here in China.
I know.
You know,
recording this podcast,
yeah,
right?
We're all digital in some way or another. You know, and one of the things that's happened is we as consumers are beyond digital compared to what enterprises are. I think that the thing that we have to look at is not that we're going to do a digital transformation, but we're going through a digital maturation process. And every organization is somewhere else on that spectrum. There are some that are just starting. There are some that are really, really advanced. But the concept that I like to get across to organizations is to understand that digital is a combination of mindset, people, process, and technology. And oftentimes people confuse technology, you know, with what digital is. So, hey, if we want to be digital, let's go out and buy some technology.
Yeah.
And that won't work.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a difference between, as I call it, technology transition and digital transformation. transition versus transformation. And what we've been doing in the space for a long time is transitioning. And what we're trying to do is think about how do we transform. The reason I use maturity is because a lot of people think, okay, today I'm not transformed, but tomorrow I'm going to be transformed.
Right, right.
You know,
right.
And it's not something you're done with. You never finish maturing.
Yeah.
Well, maybe you do. But we never finish maturing. We're always going through that maturation process.
Yeah, and so it's more of a continuum, right, versus rather kind of that traditional project-based milestone by milestone. Let's check off the box. Oh, yes, we've, as you say, we've put our forms for, talent management processes online, check the box, and we're done. And I think we kind of did that for a while in HR tech, right? That seemed to be, if you go back maybe a little further than many of our listeners recall, but going back to, say, pre-Y2K days, that implementation, that goal of, I attended, Jason, so many go-live parties.
Right, yeah, yeah.
These gala parties, but that's almost nothing now.
And I think the thing that's different, another big thing that's different, is we have to be continuously maturing. So the continuously maturing doesn't happen every 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how we've done it in the past is, okay, every 10 years we're going to switch technology, so then we may mature, you know, this much. You know, we have to be maturing on a real-time basis now, which requires different skill sets from the function.
Yeah. What's different now, Disa? You've been in the HR tech space for a little while. What's different now in how these technologies are driving kind of the positive business outcomes that HR leaders are looking for as compared to, say, 15 years ago?
Yeah, so I think, it all ties back to one word, which is design. And that the tools today are designed for the workforce instead of designed for HR. Now, that doesn't mean that's how we implement them.
Yeah.
But for the most part, they're being designed, whereas the employees and the managers use these tools. They're designed for them. They're delivered to them in a way where it makes it natural, I'll use the language, for them. And if they use the tools, we in HR get the data. Whereas in the past, the tools have been designed for us in HR, and we've pushed them out to the employee, hoping, praying, begging for them to use our tools. But people don't like to hear from HR today. You know, most people, when you get a call from HR, it's not like, yes, HR's calling.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's still a negative.
I know a guy in HR, good HR guy, solid guy, and he likes to walk around the offices there and just kind of surprise people and just say, hey, what's going on? Like, drop-ins.
Right.
Because he likes to see the people cringe when he drops in unexpectedly. Like, what do I do wrong? Kind of thing.
Well, and, you know, and we even talk about it a lot as we think about, like, case deflection. Like, when you think about the word deflection, like I'm trying to deflect people away from talking to HR. You know, we talk about the shift from deflection to desire. Like, how do you get people desired to talk to HR? Like, hey, I want a new career. I'm looking for a new training class. I'm looking for new talent. Like, we have to change that mindset of HR. And that's why I think it's an amazing opportunity. The other thing that I think is amazing from an opportunity standpoint, and I talked about this here in China, was, you know, people come up to me wherever I am in the world and say, Are you afraid that AI is going to kill HR?
You know, yeah, we've heard some of that at this conference as well.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh my God, please AI, kill HR.
Why do you say that though? Devil's advocate. Why should that happen?
Yeah, and it's a little tongue in cheek. I don't mean kill HR, but you know, as I said in one of my sessions, you know, we will kill HR skill sets as we know them today because the traditional transactional HR skill sets, which are repeatable, auditable, and documented for the most part, will be able to be replaced by machines.
Right, can be super efficiently automated now, right?
And should be, in order to be streamlined, scalable, consistent, and things like that around the world. Now, what it means is it means our HR business partners, their skill sets, the things that they have been doing, will change. They have to change. So I always say, people say, are people going to lose their jobs? I'm like, people are going to lose their job tasks. Mm-hmm. As they know them today. They're not going to lose their jobs. Their jobs are going to be elevated, and finally, we're going to actually be able to see the strategic side of these people. Now, we have a mismatch, and oftentimes, where some of our business partners still want to do transactions and almost fight back against the technology, and we as a function are going to have to figure out how to get around that.
I have seen in some organizations in the past this element of control, or the old kind of fiefdom mentality that says, if I give up control of benefits administration or scheduling,
yeah.
right? Rather than go to an automated scheduling tool, et cetera, then, well, I'm afraid, what am I going to do now, right, if I sort of cede this territory to the machines, if you
yeah.
will. But,
well, and I think that it's really important, you know, the concept of ceding authority to machines, it's really important to understand that a lot of people prefer, so I talk about touching,
mm-hmm.
you know, and we think about
yeah, that's
you
a great
high
example
touch
you
digital
gave
versus high touch human.
Right.
A lot of the things that we want support on, or we have questions about, high-touch digital can provide a more high-touch experience 24/7, anywhere in the world, any language, consistent answers, than a human can.
Yeah.
So high-touch digital, there's a spot for that. There's also a huge spot for high-touch human. When I start to say, I need to talk to someone about being prescriptive about what this data means to me and how I should act upon it. So there's a need for humans and there's a need for the machines. One doesn't replace each other by any means, but the tasks that each are going to do, you know, are going to change a lot. And it's up to every organization to push it through the organization and help people understand that digital isn't your enemy.
Right.
You know, digital, is your helper in order to get to the next level of where we're trying to take the function.
Yeah. And we're seeing more of that, right? Like, as the profession sort of evolves and maybe even turns over to some extent, right? Like, everybody entering the workforce today, right? You did a great example in your speech today, right? You said, everybody hold up your smartphone. Congratulations, you're now digital, right? And you're making a really important point. And maybe this wasn't the full point, but one of the things I took out from it is literally everyone is digital starting right now, starting from maybe the 8-year-olds out there and up, right?
Yeah, I laugh all the time when people say, we don't install software. Mm. Like, we all install software. Every time we go to the App Store,
right.
we're installing software. We configure software. We use software. And most importantly, it's important for people to think about, we judge software.
Yeah.
You know, so we download an
and
app from the App Store.
It, right?
Yeah, we download an app from the App Store. If we don't like it, how long do we give it?
Yeah.
10 seconds? How often do we go back to see if it got better? We don't.
Yeah, never so, back. Yeah.
Never back. So from a value standpoint, if I push phase one of my project out to employees and they don't think it's a value, they leave,
yeah.
and they're not going to come back.
That's a really interesting point, Jason, and one that's probably worth thinking about, because we have talked for a while in this space around this idea of the consumerization of enterprise technology, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's been a concept that's been around for probably 10 years now, right? That the tools that people use in their personal lives are more powerful and better than the ones they can use at work, and therefore they're going to demand more from HR, from IT, and from their enterprise systems. And I believe that's completely true. I also believe that's been going on for quite some time. But this concept of getting rid of software in our personal lives or abandoning it, maybe, that's probably driving some challenges inside organizations as well in terms of adoption.
I think that it's a V word,
yeah.
you know? It's value.
Yeah.
And it's employees are going to do things that they see value from. So I always laugh when people say, you know, we can get our employees to fill out their LinkedIn profile, but we can't get them to fill out the talent profile.
Yeah.
Why won't they fill out their talent profile? Because we don't use it. You know, when we go to apply for a, you know, when all of a sudden we need a new XYZ, instead of looking at the talent profile we have internally, recruiting does what?
Yeah.
Opens a rec.
Yeah.
So why would employees fill out the talent profile when they get their value from LinkedIn?
Yeah, and I don't want to get this wrong because I only read it quickly, but I literally read it this morning. Like, our pals at LinkedIn are exploiting this.
Yeah.
Right? By developing some enhancements to their recruiter tools to allow, and I swear in the press release, and I love press releases, so you take them very, very seriously, but in the press release it talked about, hey, we're going to help you discover the talent you have in your organization better, inside your organization. Mm-hmm. It wasn't talking about recruiting at all. So that your point is well made there, because
yeah.
LinkedIn sees it too.
Right.
Yeah.
The thing that's most important, I'd say, about that component, though, is that what people put on LinkedIn, they often put on LinkedIn to get themselves a job. As they're being recruited, they do it for a certain reason.
All right, a little bit of exaggeration here and
yeah,
there.
Their
yeah,
their internal
yeah.
talent profile should be how I personalize
yeah.
their experience.
It should be richer, and it should be more meaningful to the organization, right?
So I truly yeah. believe that there's going to be a middle ground here where organizations are going to have to realize that, you know, when I've got a great core HR system that's got a place to store talent data, I shouldn't not store it there
yeah.
because I'm going to use that eventually to push content to people, you know, like we talked about from the sponsor,
yeah.
in a way that delivers personalized information to the people just when they need it.
Yeah.
The only way I can do that is through data.
Hey, real quick, Jason, while we still have you, I know you're jetting off to the subcontinent or somewhere, Hong Kong, right, after this. So we only have you for a few more minutes. You sit at a very interesting position kind of in the industry, because on the show, we have a lot of software leaders on the show, a lot of HR tech leaders and kind of thought leaders. But we also have a lot of CHROs and HR leaders, recruiting leaders, et cetera. You kind of play, you're in between them in many ways, right? You're still intimately familiar with what's happening in the technology space, but you're working with HR leaders at very big companies, helping them develop strategy, helping them approach HR technology, helping them achieve desired outcomes. From that hat, the hat that you wear when you talk to HR leaders, what are one or two things you're maybe hearing consistently or that are bubbling to the top of the CHRO agenda that you find interesting and might want to share with some of the audience?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. So, you know, we work with both, you know, I work with both vendors and enterprise customers on purpose because I believe it's the only way to move the market up and to the right. You know, you have to listen to what vendors are saying, and you have to work with what the CHROs are saying. What CHROs are talking about today is mainly, A, we have to think about how do we provide a better workforce experience. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of work around value proposition, culture, engagement, all tied to this concept of value proposition. But one of the things that they're all frustrated with is having their employees get lost in our tools.
Okay.
So click here to go to X, click here to go to Y, click here to go to Z. And it's not just HR, by the way. Mm-hmm. There's then the finance side, then there's the ops side.
Yeah.
So employees have 50 to 60 to 70 tool sets to use, and they get lost.
Yeah.
Then, you know, it all starts from this portal, which is really dated in most organizations. Usually it looks like a link farm.
Right.
You know, I just get lost from link to link to link. So people are trying to say, how do we get employees to engage in our capabilities that we're trying to deploy without getting frustrated,
right,
you know, with and get lost in the technology? The second thing is that people realize that data truly does have an amazing opportunity to be a differentiator. And I chose those words really carefully. Mm-hmm. There's people that say data is the new oil.
Yeah, I've heard that. Yeah,
you know,
sure.
Cool. Very cool. But, you know, if you don't know how to use the oil,
right,
it's not going to do you any good. So data has the potential to be a very huge differentiator when we think about people. But it's only that. It's only potential. So as vendors throw out all these analytics tools, you know, CHROs are on their knees drooling, saying, oh, if we just had that. What they don't understand is that they have to make sure that they have data within their organization that those tools can use.
Sure.
And they have to have their people ready to tell the stories about that data to the business people. And that's a huge gap. That's a huge chasm.
Yeah.
So the technology is there. I'll just say the last thing that most CHROs have finally recognized is the technology from the vendors in the space has exceeded what their organization can adopt.
Yeah, I knew we were going there.
For the first time ever.
Yeah, their capacity to consume is surpassed by the capabilities out there.
The HRIS, the HRMS function, the HR technology functions can't keep up with what's going on. And people come to conferences, and I always say they get SOS, shiny object syndrome. Mm-hmm. They come back with this thing, and they're like, hey, let's put it in. I was on the call earlier this morning with someone who's putting in a new engagement tool. And they're like, well, how are we going to connect this to the rest of what we're doing from a talent management standpoint? I'm like, you're not.
Yeah.
You know, unless you actually rethink your talent strategy. So these tools are great. AI is great. I mean, there's so much potential with what's going on with these tools. What's most important is that you intentionally sequence the order in which you attack these things. Because do I need a core HR? Yes. Does it need to be sexier than B? Maybe.
Right.
You know, do I need an engagement tool that does pulsing? Maybe. So intentionally sequencing is really, really important, and answering that question, what do you want to be great at versus what's it okay to be okay at? HRMS people and HRIS people haven't done that in the past. They just listen to vendors and say, let's go from 10.1 to 10.2.
Yeah.
And what did you get? What's the difference? .1.
Right.
You know, that's not enough anymore, and that doesn't sell.
Or, you know, I've had some of this experience, too, where you move from 10.1 to 10.2, and your provider says, here are the 157 new features in 10.2, and they just sort of hand you that list,
right?
And you say to yourself, okay, what do I do with that, right?
And what most organizations do, truthfully, is they move from 10.1 to 10.2, and they say, let's just get there, and then we'll add this stuff later. Later never happens. And then all of a sudden people come forward and say, we're not getting the value we thought we'd get.
Yeah.
And that's a huge miss.
Yeah. Someone on the show a long time ago, I won't say his name because he's kind of a checkered character in our industry, so I won't shout him out. I know what he's up to now, but I'm going to leave that aside. But he said, one of the interesting things he said, he was running a startup at the time, and he said, you know you're in trouble with a software provider when the release gets a number and a dot after it. You know you're in complex waters, and maybe you know you should rethink the partner you're using. But I don't know if that's really true or not, but I thought it was a funny observation. Jason, last thing. LeapGen, amazing things happening there. Maybe just for a couple of minutes, share just kind of the LeapGen story. Because if you don't mind, I put you on the spot with that one. Wasn't in the show notes.
No.
But I'd love to hear the story because it's pretty cool, and I'd love for people to hear it.
So too. I've been both on the vendor side and on the consultant side and the customer side. And one of the things that became clear to me after I left the Marcus Buckingham Company in 2016 was that there was this amazing rush of confusion still going on in the space. But the one thing was clear to me that you actually had to love the space in order to truly be able to drive it forward. So if you look at the name LeapGen, mm-hmm. where the name LeapGen comes from, that leap actually comes from a great book called The Radical Leap by a good friend of mine named Steve Farber. And LEAP stands for love, energy, audacity, and proof. So you have to love what you do.
That does spell LEAP, yes.
You have to love what you do to generate energy, to do the audacious, and then to prove value. And you have to keep doing that over and over again.
Awesome.
So that's where the name LeapGen comes from. And really what we try to do is be a coach to enterprise organizations and basically say, this world is confusing. There isn't one right answer, but you need to have a path. You need to have a strategy as to how to navigate it. And the role that we play is to be a coach to them. We don't tell them what technology we need to use.
And you don't even start talking about technology when you walk in the door, I imagine.
No, we say, guys, you need to figure out what you want to be when you grow up, and we're here as a coach to help you, and we can do that by living with you. We can do that as a subscription basis. But overall, it's just, hey, there's a helper in your pocket, when you all of a sudden get stuck in these rough waters that we call this weird world of HR technology.
Yeah, and you've got a great team you're building.
Great team.
Great folks over there doing great work. And they can find you. They can find you everywhere, but LeapGen they can connect with how?
Yeah, LeapGen.com.
LeapGen.com, that's easy.
Easy.
We'll get that in the show notes. Jason, I know you're busy. I know you're running to the airport.
All good.
I'm glad you were able to take 20 minutes and hang out with us. Great to see you. We spent about 10 days here together with the crew.
Yeah, between Singapore and China.
We'll have to tell the story of the crew later on. But the funny thing here, and then before we sign off, is when we do these remote shows, we just record them kind of, a bootstrap way,
totally.
A little DIY way. The sound quality's not always awesome. We use the phone to do the timing, so I have an idea how, how long the show is going. While we've been sitting here for 21 and a half minutes now, my WeChat is blowing up on my phone.
Yeah.
And that's the group all sharing pictures with each other.
And do you know why I've been able to be successful here in China?
Why,
my
Jason?
Helper, Sophie.
I'm going to tell you what. Can we talk about that for a second?
Yeah, she has been amazing.
The HR Tech China team has done just a remarkable job from top to bottom. And Trish and I will probably do like a whole HR Tech China and maybe HR Festival Asia kind of reset show at some point. But yeah, since you brought it up, the HR Tech China organizers have assigned us assistants to work with us and help us basically throughout the entirety of the conference. My assistant is Ruby. I see her over there. Hi, Ruby. How are you? And you can say hi. It's fine. Say hello.
Hi.
All right. And they not only do they assist us at the show, translate for us if need be, make sure we're in the right place at the right time, they arrive at the hotel and make sure we get on the shuttle bus correctly. They make sure we get to dinner correctly. I mean, just fantastic.
It's made the experience a gazillion
Wonderful.
Percent better.
And now we're all connected on WeChat so we can be friends for forever.
Exactly.
Awesome.
Thanks,
Jason
Haverbrook. Appreciate
great
it.
To see you.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us. Hey, real quick, we do want to thank our friends at Panopto one more time for businesses and universities. Panopto is everything YouTube isn't, with enterprise-grade security, built-in recording and live streaming, and a unique search engine that finds any word spoken in any video. Panopto is how professionals share knowledge, so check them out. Thank you to Jason, of course. Thanks to Trish, who's hosting the show, not here. Thanks to everyone at HR Tech China. We're going to do one more HR Tech China show, which I'm about to record in a minute, but has been a fantastic experience. So thanks to everybody for making it possible. We also want to remind everybody to subscribe to the HR Happy Hour show wherever you get your podcasts. And tell a friend while you're at it. Tell a friend in China, even. Bring up those subscribe numbers. So thanks for listening. My name is Steve Bowes. We will see you next time. And bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the HR Happy Hour Show, your source for information and conversation on work, the workplace, technology, and more. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net.